Hello and welcome to the Sustainability Leaders Series. I'm Auriel Morrison. The fact that sustainability in business improves efficiencies and reduces costs is widely accepted, and the numbers tell the story. ESG assets in capital markets are projected to rise to $50 trillion globally by 2025. Sustainability-linked loans and financing have already exceeded $1.6 trillion, and a government focus on green initiatives is set to boost global GDP by $6 trillion by 2050. But how is success measured?
ESG claims are just that, claims. And while some corporate leaders are becoming increasingly frustrated that their ESG efforts are not being rewarded, it's largely because some are putting focus on the reporting, not on the doing.
I think ESG or sustainability issues are important to companies because, one, they're being asked by their stakeholders. Who are their stakeholders? Their regulators, their clients and consumers, and also, I believe, their employees. We know the new generation of employees choosing companies based on their values, whether they are aligned.
On the markets, trillions of dollars are flowing into funds focused on ESG performance. And how much it impacts returns is increasingly central to investors' decisions. A report by Global Data found that 78% of international investors place more emphasis on ESG than they did 5 years ago. And McKinsey says 83% of C-suite executives and investment professionals believe that ESG programs will generate more shareholder value in 5 years than they do today. But the problem of measuring success is yet to be solved, as well as the big question, who is going to pay?
We know to invest in sustainability measures does incur cost, and who is going to pay for it? So I think we hope that it is a collaboration of public-private sector, the government, all have to come to play and step up in order to resolve this existential crisis that we have.
And that includes standardizing regulation. With over 600 ESG reporting standards worldwide, calls are becoming more demanding for a globally accepted framework.
To talk more about the rewards of sustainability for corporates and how to measure success, I'm joined by Matthew Nelson, Oceania Chief Sustainability Officer for EY. Matt, a pleasure to have you with us today. Thank you so much for joining us. Now, what sort of feedback on sustainability are you getting from the corporates that you speak to, and how much has it changed over the last 5 years?
Yeah, there's no question that over the last 5 years, and in particular over the last 2 years, we've seen a significant shift in momentum and focus on sustainability, or as some people like to call it, ESG. There's been a range of factors that have driven that, but probably the most important and impactful change that we're seeing within our organisations that we work with is this concept of looking to shift to how do I embed sustainability or ESG factors into my organisational strategy, as opposed to a separate sustainability strategy that organisations have tended to pulled together in the past.
Now, in the 2021 EY Global Institutional Investor Survey, 90% of those surveyed said they'd pay more attention to a company's sustainability performance when making investment decisions. Does that number sound high enough to you? You just alluded to the change in the past 2 years, let alone five.
Yeah, look, I think it is a step in the right direction, obviously, and it always makes you think about those less than 10% of investors that aren't considering ESG in their decisions, which makes you always shudder to who they would be. But the key thing I would say that has come through this institutional investor discussion as well is also not just those that are making decisions based on ESG information, but the institutional investors have also told us that they don't currently have necessarily the right information in order to make very nuanced investment decisions. So they're telling us they're making the decisions, but not necessarily having the right information to fully inform those decisions. And that's a bit of a gap. And that's where we see corporates really looking at ways to say, how can I provide the right information to investors that may differentiate me in my industry sector, and how do I improve on those so I actually start to see the impact on my share price or my overall organisational value.
So that's, I guess, specifically from the angle of targeting comms towards investors. But as you started out by talking about, this is really about embedding sustainability into corporate strategy. What do businesses need to do? What is a starting point here?
We looked at the most recent State of the Environment report for Australia. It quite clearly shows significant downfalls, and we're not achieving the goals that we're looking to achieve. The most recent IPCC report is the same, that we're continuing to see greenhouse gas emissions increase and the impacts of climate change get worse. So we have this disconnect between all of this activity within corporates, yet at the same time, not delivering the overall macro outcomes that we're looking for. And I think that's likely to be the most important shift that's needed by organisations, which is understanding planetary boundaries and really looking deeply at value chains and saying, how can I actually look and make my value chain be supportive or restorative to those planetary boundaries, rather than just undertake activities that are connected to an ESG or sustainability agenda?
Now, Matt, one of the big problems here seems to be measuring success. How do you track the return on sustainability investment?
Yeah, great question as well. And there's sort of two things that I would say to that. First of all, I think if you get step one that I just described right, and you actually identify what truly matters, it enables you to then be very clear about the measures of success that are the most important for you as a business. Traditionally, frameworks for sustainability reporting or ESG reporting have been very broad, with many, many metrics that organisations are required to report against. And the challenge with that is it becomes very hard for stakeholders to then say, well, what does performance look like? What matters more in a particular industry sector? Is it eradicating modern slavery in the supply chain? Is it about gender diversity? Is it about greenhouse gas emissions? What are the most important factors for a particular company, and how can I then compare between them? So I think step one, which is this concept of saying, what are the most material things for us as an organisation and the sector in which we operate, is a great start, because you can then start to go, okay, I can put frameworks in place to measure against those and actually determine objectives that are going to set them. The other one I would say is that, as we mentioned in this Enough report, is this concept of planetary boundaries and actually understanding what the planet can actually absorb in the context of environment or the social inclusion elements will help businesses actually set truly restorative goals. And that's probably a bigger ticket item that we'll see emerging over the next few years.
Matt, we really appreciate your time today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Great to be here. Thanks for the opportunity. Bye for now.
ESG positive funds have outperformed globally over the last 5 years, according to sustainability data firm ESG Book. Joining us now is Dr. Daniel Klier, ESG Book's CEO. Daniel, welcome. It's great to have you with us today. Now, the big question seems to be on whether being sustainable is genuinely good for the bottom line. And your research suggests that, in fact, it is.
Thank you very much for having me on the show. Yes, I think there is a growing global consensus that doing good and doing the right thing for your wallet actually is coming together. And that is really driven by two different factors. One, we see increasingly companies that are embracing more sustainable practices, but obviously also the major investment themes of the future, which is going into climate change, gender diversity, circularity. All those themes that are now attracting trillions of investments, they are performing better. But there's a flip side to this, which is managing risk. Right? You want to have an approach to avoid human rights scandals, environmental problems. And so the financial return really comes by the combination of the two. You pick the winners and you avoid problems.
So, Daniel, within the research that you've done at ESG Book, you actually have the facts that show that sustainability is on the rise, and that's being backed by capital flows.
So we see that now $130 trillion have signed up to the UNPRI, so the Principles of Responsible Investing. All that means is investors, the largest investors of the world, have pledged to integrate ESG and sustainability criteria in how they invest. Last year, we had COP26 in Glasgow, $130 trillion, different investors, but very overlapping, stood up in Glasgow saying, they will incorporate net zero considerations in the way they build investment portfolios. So ESG, sustainability more broadly, climate change in particular, which is such a big issue, is now at the forefront of everybody. And so we see now trillions being reallocated from, let's say, more conventional portfolios to portfolios that align with these future goals. And very obviously for this, you need transparency because financial markets work with signals. Signals is data, and this is where we come in.
Is there a difference when you look at the geographic spread?
There is a difference. I think Europe started first. It was partly by conviction of citizens and investors and to a very large degree by mandate that came out of Brussels and out of central banks. So regulators play a very important role here. But also in other parts of the world where we are very active, the US has caught up significantly, especially over the last 12 to 18 months. This is now a topic on everybody's agenda and we see trillions moving. And I'm really pleased to see the movement in Asia. I think driven partly by some big central banks and regulators like the MAS and the HKMA, but also I think by investors realizing that the two sides actually go together. I remember my first discussion with investors in Asia 5-6 years ago, where I had to argue why doing good and doing and delivering financial returns actually go together. That discussion has now disappeared. I think people are now looking at the how, and very clearly in Asia that the data landscape is a little bit more fragmented, but we see a lot of progress there.
Mm. Now, you've had some interesting information through your research that's found that none of the world's major market indices are actually on track to remain below 1.5 degrees, and that is truly worrying.
Yeah, it's very clear. If we look at our data, so we put every company in the world on a temperature pathway. So are you aligned with 1.5 degrees or are you trending to 2, 2.5, 3 degrees? So essentially putting a very complex discussion into a metric. So every investor, you and I can look at my portfolio and say, am I 1.5 degree, 1.7, 2.2? And therefore, how hot will the world will be if everybody behaves like the companies that you own? And as you say, there's a big spread. Probably the best performers in the world, the Scandinavians, have been on this topic for a long time. 40% of the index is aligned. And then there are other parts of the world. And sadly, Asia in particular is still a place where probably less than 10% of companies in the major indices are aligned with a 1.5 degree world. There is a little bit more time and there's clearly an economic imperative that is slightly different, but also a real important push now to move the agenda forward.
Mm-hmm. All right, Daniel, it's been a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. Lovely to see you.
And that wraps up this episode of the Sustainability Leaders Series. I'm Aurel Morrison. For more in this special 12-part series, head to apacnetwork.com.